Dabney moves the minutes of February 10th after having studied them thoroughly. Moves the minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Anytime, Chair.
Okay, with that, now I will have Representative Vandiver move House File 1806 be recommended, passed, and sent to which committee, Representative?
I believe it would go to
Civil Law.
Civil Law.
Okay, that's our subcommittee. So we will move 1806 to be moved to Civil Law. Representative Vandiver, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if Representative Simpson could start by passing out the candy. This is my first bill in Commerce, so I wanted to be sure we covered that
okay.
for
that's,
you.
That's a good thing.
House File 1806.
Start over there.
Mr. Chair, I need to get a refund. I just paid for these things. Mr. Chair,
oh, man. You really go. Okay, let's give Representative Mulray.
I have a question for the chair.
Yes, sir.
For new members bringing things to committee, can you bring the leftovers to the second committee in the day and count?
That'd be appropriate. Yes. As long as it's still edible.
No, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vandiver.
One correction to what Representative Mulray said. There is a brand new unopened bag of M&Ms here.
Oh, okay. Unopened
That's
bag.
Different from
Canada. Okay, welcome to the committee, and Madam Secretary, welcome to the committee. Please present your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1806 extends the Electronic Real Estate Transaction Task Force for two more years. The committee or the task force has been highly successful. They have developed and are able to electronically transfer simple forms. And we have a letter here in support of our bill from the Bar Association, which I'll have the page pass out. But I'm going to ask Secretary Kiffmeyer to talk more to the committee about the need for the two-year extension.
Thank you, Representative Vandiver. Madam Secretary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. It's a pleasure to come before you again. You have supported this task force in the past and the process going along at this time. And certainly the work that the task force has done is developing standards to reduce the time required and frustration caused by residential real estate transactions and doing this through automation in a very unique way. It is the only one of its kind in the country, doing it through a standards basis with public and private partnership, working on these standards together and its implementation. We are currently in phase one, and two of the five pilot counties are live, and the other three will be going live this month, and very successfully doing that. Upon completion, the public will be able to carry out these basic transactions by far more convenient, automated, electronic, and remote means. It leaves in place present non-general fund revenue and appropriation mechanisms just as a matter of interest. And we are in the process right now of Dakota County, several thousand simple transactions, which compare transaction times of approximately 15 seconds with prior elapsed time of up to 30 days. That's just one example of the success. But we have more complicated transactions yet to come in phase two, more difficult documents, more time-consuming. And while good progress has and is being made, we just need more time and continued funding to complete the task. The next phase includes more county offices as well as more complicated transactions, auditors, treasurers, as well as recorders. The Electronic Real Estate Recording Task Force has been very frugal. Our percentage of task force expenses are extremely minimal. The money that has been used has been for setting standards, doing technical work, and paying also to support the pilots in the counties. We are still within the approximate budget first provided to us in 2001, and the dollars we are saving now are to go to phase two implementation of standards in the pilot phase, second phase. We're the only state in the country doing this. We're already a national leader. We ask for your continued support for the important work of the Electronic Real Estate Recording Task Force. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. I would ask this question this time to members of the audience. Is there anyone else, or is there anyone that wishes to testify against House File 1806? Is there any opposition to 1806 before we get into questions from members? Did you have anyone else to testify for?
We did have, I believe, some others who might, but if it's...
We'll see where this goes. There seems to be no controversy to this.
Okay.
But I'll open it at this time for the members that have any questions for the Secretary of State or Representative Vandiver. Okay, with that, I will renew my motion, or Representative Vandeveer renews his motion that House File 1806 be recommended pass and sent to the Committee on Civil Law. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Madam Secretary and Representative Vandeveer. Item next, members, is 1806. Let's go to 1801. Okay. The next bill that we have is House File 1801, a cleansing bill. The procedure I'd like to use, I understand that Commissioner Wilson has other commitments, so we will let the author present her bill. Then I would appreciate if Commissioner Wilson could make a few comments and answer any questions that there might be from the members. And then we will honor his schedule, and then we will go into other testifiers, and then we will, of course, have questions as needed to sort some of these things through. So with that, Representative Klinzing, welcome to the Commerce Committee. Representative Linder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to move House File 1801 to have that before us.
Okay, thank you, Chairman Linder. House File 1801 has been moved. And to go to civil law. Civil law will be the next step here. So welcome to the committee, and please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. This particular bill is a product of many, many months of work by many members of the House, and it's a result of some problems that have cropped up in Woodbury, but not limited to Woodbury, as you'll see from some of the testifiers today. I've received about a couple hundred emails that can basically be summed up as homeowners are being left holding the bag for some problems they didn't create in a lot of cases. Homeowners with houses built as early as the last 5 to 10 years are discovering the structures of their home is rotting. And this is not all homeowners, but there is a larger percentage of homes in the last built in the last five to ten years where this is the case. In some cases, the building techniques were recommended by the state code. In other cases, they weren't recommended by the state code, but were not the best practices that should have been used. In most cases, the damage to the home has gone undetected for about 7 years or so. And now the damage on the home is readily apparent, sometimes makes the house uninhabitable. Like I said earlier, Woodbury seems to be at the forefront of this problem, although you'll discover from the testifiers here today that the problem is statewide for homes mostly built in the last 10 years. According to city building officials and even frustrated but very reputable builders, there does seem to be a bubble of homes constructed in the mid-90s. That have a higher percentage of problems. Construction techniques and codes have changed some since these homes were built, but as these homeowners will attest today, newer construction techniques and codes cannot help them get their home repaired in a timely and quality manner. I'm aware that overstating a problem like this can lead to market problems for an otherwise healthy housing market. I do not want us to enact legislation that could devalue the home market in any area of Minnesota, including these homes that really are fixable. We have enough homeowners experiencing problems to warrant reviewing the policies surrounding home construction, but our housing market is not in crisis yet. In fact, Woodbury was named number one best place to live in the nation by Money Magazine this year, and one of the criteria for such an impressive title was the value and quality of housing in Woodbury. Therefore, this legislation has been carefully crafted to maintain the value of Minnesota's homes and the robustness of the market, while at the same time trying to eliminate some of the obstacles in the process for homeowners who are having homes built and who need their newly constructed homes repaired. The pieces of the bill, I will be very brief because I think you'll hear very specific testimony on each of these today, have come from a wide range of stakeholders. The first one is requiring some continuing education requirements for contractors. It's not actually adding continuing education requirements, but it is asking that some of those continuing education requirements be on the state building codes. Right now, there's no assurance that the builder's continuing ed has any state building and energy code education. Also, there's a piece in this particular piece of legislation that creates a homeowner's guide that provides buyers with instructions for basic home maintenance, information on statutory home warranty, and other helpful information to combat moisture problems. And this came from the idea that I think I get a thicker manual on how to operate my clock radio than I do on how to operate my home when I buy it from the manufacturer. So the commissioner will be speaking briefly to that, and that will be a product of the Department of Commerce. There will also be the creation or actually added to the website that already exists, some guidelines for selecting qualified privately hired home inspectors with an opportunity for actually the private home inspectors associations to link to that website so that those who are shopping, consumers who are shopping for a privately hired home inspector have some criteria with which to pick out these private home inspectors. There will also be, there's also a piece in this bill that asks for some annual analysis by the state of reporting requirements to evaluate if cities have appropriate staff to meet the demand for residential building inspection. Another piece requires that meeting between homeowners and builders to discuss the problem and any construction defects happens before the attorneys become involved so that the builder does have an opportunity to repair the defect. The last piece of the bill is language to permit the awarding of attorney's fees to plaintiffs if the defendant's response is judged to be particularly egregious. I think I do have an author's amendment that should be in your files. Yeah.
Okay, thank you for cleansing. I will move H180182. Be amended to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Any discussion on that? This is one that you're favorable to at this point, so we know we'll be working off here. Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill in the shape the author would like. I think we'll take testimony before. I've got a, just members help me out here. I've got a 0839 Dabney Amendment. I have a 0183 Osterman Amendment, and I have a 1A5 Mahoney Amendment. Are there any others? Okay. Okay. Would you like to bring Commissioner Wilson to the table now?
Mr. Chair, I
have Which ones do you have?
Mahoney one is
not. Oh. We want to pass the Mahoney Amendment out, please. That'd be the
A5.
Oh, we had it, but nobody else did. Oh, we just passed an amendment that nobody has. Okay, let's back up a little bit. They have the... Okay, they had that one. Okay. Oh, my side didn't get it? The one we just did? Tough. Okay. Because that side, we'd have to get it for them. But, it's the amendment... if you could pass out those A2 amendments over on this side so they can look at them, and if they have any objection to them, we can bring that up at a later point here. So with that, Commissioner Wilson, welcome to the Commerce Committee. You, as always, are certainly welcome. And if you could please provide testimony on House File 1801.
Chairman David, members of the Commerce Committee, thank you for the opportunity to visit. We'll tell you that within our department, no issue is getting more attention than this because of the magnitude and the impact that it can have on our overall economy. I was asked to limit my comments to the area of a manual that could be produced and provided to a homeowner at the time when builders, when a home is completed, usually at the time of closing or immediately prior, do a walkthrough. And that walkthrough could have a lot more important items connected with it than it currently does. And one of the things that we thought were important is that the homeowners recognize that even if they come out of a relatively new home, it's the one that they're buying is probably a lot more unique in the way that it's engineered. The error for in the engineering, the room for error is much more narrow. And so the importance on the way that you live in a home and the way that you maintain it becomes even more critical than it ever has before. A couple of the elements that we thought we that would be recommended highly is that from testimony, and I was in Woodbury for some of the public hearing meetings, is that people are unaware to some degree as to the requirements for maintenance and for a checklist. So what we would do is in that manual is make sure that we provide a checklist, recommended time frames for these maintenance items. It's not that the home builders don't have it. They do. We've looked at their material, and we think that it can be expanded and improved upon, but made a part of this manual. The same way with the maintenance, the way that maintenance is handled in catalog. There's, as I mentioned, not a lot of room for error. The maintenance is critical more today, not just for the preservation of the home, but in terms of energy saving, which our department is also very much aware of. From the testimony also, it was important that the homeowners know who the principal suppliers and subcontractors were for their homes. So we were recommending that that be a part of this. In addition, then, in a more generic way, we have a catalog that of maintenance that does cover a lot of the detail, how you can balance the airflow, the moisture content, the landscaping, and general home maintenance in a generic way. And this can be provided. There are builders now doing some of these things, but probably not all of them. So what we would recommend as part of this bill is to have a guideline for a manual that can be used at the time a home is sold and during that walkthrough process. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions for the Commissioner? Representative Vandeveer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I just wonder, I think that this sounds like a pretty good idea that the homeowner have this information, but has the department looked at all at eliminating any forms? Because you get so many at a closing now. I mean, you can have a stack that high that people don't even look at them. And has there been any thought given to eliminating some since we are adding some?
Commissioner Wilson?
Mr. Chairman, member, actually, it's really two different things. The closing documents, I'm very much appreciative of the one-inch or more documents and all the disclosure forms, et cetera, are part of that. However, that's usually reviewed pretty heavily during the time leading up to the closing, and usually put away and hardly referred to except for tax reasons maybe later on. This is a document that we would hope that the walkthrough process, the builder would show some of the important areas of maintenance and kept someplace where it would be readily referred to, because the schedule of maintenance is almost on a regular routine and should be referred to throughout the year and for as long as you own the home. So this seems to me would be in the kitchen drawer where my wife would have it, with warranties, suppliers, and put a high level of importance in accessibility. I appreciate your comment. I think it's too different.
Representative Vandeveer? Okay, any other questions for the Commissioner? Representative? Nelson?
How would this be different than like a car new owner's manual? Because I've bought a lot of used cars, and most of the time you don't have the manual with them. Who would be responsible for maintaining this and keeping it? And would there be penalties for the owner if they're not having it? How would they reconstruct this afterwards?
Commissioner Wilson?
Mr. Chairman, member, I would hope that it would be passed from the owner at the time of a sale. We've not thought about penalties and how to maintain it, keep it updated. But most of the material is reference material, and where people can get the answers that are not covered in the manual.
Representative Nelson?
I guess I'm thinking about working in that industry, construction, that the number of people that work on it and the subcontractors that work on building a house and things that each one could do that have an effect on a car. Usually you can go get a replace the manual from Ford or GM, you could ask for it and buy it. But this would be a very unique document for every house. Would be, if you're going to have a list of subcontractors that they could go back on and check on, it would be very difficult to reconstruct if it was lost or misplaced. And I know some people are real good about keeping all their manuals and keeping all their stuff. And other people, when you go and you buy a stove, a refrigerator, or a house, car, whatever, they throw that manual, the first thing that gets thrown away, and they just continue on their merry way. It would be very difficult to reconstruct this at a later date.
Commissioner Wilson.
Mr. Chair, member. We would not make it unique to the home. I perfectly well appreciate it. It is much like an automobile manual, in as much as there would be scheduled maintenance and routine checks that you could do, as I just did recently. And if you expect 200,000 miles, you follow it, you're likely to get it. But it would be very difficult. Because you're absolutely right in terms of, even if a house looks the same, built much to the same plan, they're all unique. And the way people live in them is unique. And the maintenance that's conducted on is unique. So to perform, it would be a burden on the industry, really. That's why we would prefer that the list of material suppliers and subcontractors that worked on this home would be provided, and the terms and warranties be a little bit more generic.
Representative Nelson. Representative Rukavina.
Commissioner, like every other commissioner in the state, we took some pretty significant cuts last year. There's a lot of different requirements in this bill of yours. How are you going to pay for it?
Commissioner.
I'm speaking to the issue of the I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Representative.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Do you support the bill?
Commissioner.
Most of it.
Good answer. Representative Rukavina.
I don't care about what you just commented on. What I'm asking you is, you're required to do a lot of stuff in this bill, so do you support it? Because I know you've had a lot of personnel cuts and your budget's been cut, and I'm looking in here just quickly. It says on page 2, the commissioner must adopt standards for continuing education. On page 3, the commissioner must develop additional standards. The commissioner must consult with a private organization to assess the needs for additional parts requirements. The commissioner shall publicize additional standards. The commissioner must contract with a private organization to develop residential building contractors, curriculum. Let's see what else we got here. Mr. Chair, the commissioner must develop a guide for homeowners and make it available. The commissioner must, in the homeowner's guide, appropriate ways to encourage homeowners. The commissioner must create a web page. The commissioner must suspend the licenses. Commissioner, how are you going to pay for this?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative. I'm here specifically to testify on behalf. We do support the maintenance. I do appreciate your question on the broader.
Not you.
I'm not willing yet to commit to the entire bill, but we do. Many of those things are one time, or don't require a lot of ongoing cash or management. A few of them do, and we are studying that.
I know.
Was it Rukavina?
I'm curious. Frankly, we're going to pass a law here. It's going to deal with a lot more than what you came here to testify about. But you are required to do all these different things. There's about 7 or 8 mandates that you're according to do. And I'm curious how you're going to pay for them.
Commissioner Wilson? Or to that point, Representative Dorman?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, and to the office, is there a fiscal note on this bill somewhere?
Was there a fiscal note on this bill? We requested it, and it was negligible. So as far as Ron Soderberg said, the cost would be negligible. That's what I'm hearing from three directions.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Rukavina.
You know, I've been around here 18 years, and I used to be a chair too, Mr. Chair. I chaired a finance committee, and I've seen fiscal bills go from $4.5 million to zero when a commissioner wanted a bill, and from zero to $20 million when he did or she did. So fiscal notes, whatever I guess the Department of Finance wants to make it, but no one at this table is gullible enough to believe that this bill isn't going to cost what seems to me to be a significant amount of money.
Representative Drummond, to that point.
Yeah, to that point, it would be a heck of a precedent. So, Representative Rukavina, I think I may have to create a couple more bills because if this rascal doesn't have any cost, that's interesting.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Rukavina?
I don't think your LGA bill had any cost.
No, I didn't.
That was negligible.
Negligible. Okay, I have Mahoney. Representative Rukavina, you still have the floor.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, for your patience. I'm done.
Okay, I have Mahoney, then Linder. Then what we're going to do when the commissioner is done answering questions, I'll be asking the question if there's anyone here to testify that's from more than like 50 miles away, that's from out in greater Minnesota, and we'll hear from them first whether they're for or against the bill or whatever provisions. Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, just so you know, 50 miles from the state capital is really not greater Minnesota. That's just metro area. That's kind of like North Branch and I think.
Well, Representative Mahoney, when it comes to transportation, it's counted as rural. 169 and 494 is rural. So.
I thought it would count as like outside that rural area for job zones, but you know.
Okay.
I'm never going to let
you for the commissioner.
Yes, I do. Mr. Commissioner, you know, you're talking about an owner's manual for a home. You know, I don't really work on homes much anymore. I think I've worked on a couple where I got paid. And I try never to do it again. I have seen what they put in for mechanical systems now. And really, after trying to go through them, I'd probably have to try to get my 16-year-old daughter to help me program the computer. Is your manual, and they change. I mean, they changed literally overnight, the control systems and the what you want to bring in for fresh air makeup versus closing it down, with the settings you need for the summer versus the winter. And I can just envision some good trial lawyer coming back to you and saying, you know, here's your manual. You told this person to do that, and, you know, they had a carbon monoxide poisoning, or they totally screwed up the house and got moisture damage. And have you given any thought to that? I mean, I don't want the state of Minnesota having to get caught up in a lot of things when it really should be an insurance company that gets caught up in it.
Commissioner?
Chairman, Representative Mahoney. I very much appreciate the sophistication. That's what I mentioned earlier. When I first started building homes, they had 50 amp of service, and it wasn't long till it was 100. 200 was common a few years ago. 400 now, and some are being built with 600 and 800. That they're doing a lot of work within a home, and the equipment is very sophisticated, and it is digitally drafted, and the engineering is important. It also, that's why we think the manual is important, that people understand things to look at that are not specific. You're right. There's no way I believe that we could make a manual specific to every home. It would be really burdensome. So that's the reason it is generic. But in terms of, it's like going into a restaurant when the door is extremely hard to pull open, you have negative vacuum. If your fireplace is not drawn, it's a hint that you have a bigger problem than maybe the fireplace. The makeup air is not adequate. The manual would help people identify the routine maintenance things they ought to be doing and on what schedule, and secondly, what things to look for that would lead to further inspection.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, aren't the home sellers doing that now? Aren't they giving the home buyer an outline of what they're supposed to do, who built the home, what kind of equipment went in? You know, your spouse would put it in the drawer in the kitchen. Me, you know, mine goes into some box that I can't find anymore. So, I mean, the home builders are doing that now, aren't they? For most of this?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, from the experience in talking to a fair number of home builders and the experience that I've had, a few do, but most don't. And like I say, a few years ago, it didn't matter quite as much. The engineering was not so tight and nor as complicated, and all the more reason that we have this kind of a manual and an emphasis be put on the importance of the routine maintenance checklist be done. We're just hoping to cut off the problems from reoccurring.
Representative Mahoney? No. Good, thank you. Representative Linder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just listening to the comments, I agree with most of the things being said, and I just wonder if this is a little bit of overkill, and it should be the responsibility of the builders to provide, you know, whatever manual is appropriate for the house, and I think most people get probably more manuals and more pieces of paper that's already been said than what they read. It seems like the issue that brought this bill forward is a lot bigger than the state getting involved in a manual. And I realize this is part of it, and I support Representative Klensing's bill, but maybe this is an area that the state shouldn't get into for a lot of various reasons. Do we have a precedent for getting involved in something like this, providing a manual for some industry between a consumer and a vendor?
Mr. Pender?
Did you hear Director Linder's question? Have we and other, or maybe Commissioner or to that point, Representative Gerlach?
Mr. Chairman, I share some of Representative Linder's concerns that, you know, is this overkill with, are we doing too many manuals? But government does do a whole range of ones. Another very similar related one would be the lead paint. Realtors are required to, homes that are built prior to 1978, I believe is the year, are required to provide by law pamphlet that's produced by the Attorney General's office about lead paint and the hazards thereof and the warnings and what you can do about it and all those sorts of things. So there's one example just off the top of my head, but there are a lot of them. But I just, you know, throw it up since you were asking about that. But
to that point? To that point, Representative Nelson?
That was another question I had, but in this, there's the delete part here. They're deleting information required continuing education on maintaining lead paint and lead paint abatement procedures as in the bill. And that was a question I had, is why that was included in it. Because that, I know the mold is a big problem more in the newer homes, but I don't think we should be removing the requirement for teaching people about lead beta payment, because it's still a big problem out there.
Representative Klensing, could you make some comments on what Representative Linder said and Nelson and Gerlach?
Yes. I think that it's written the way I read it is it's more of a the homeowner's guide is presented more as a resource that's available. It says that the commissioner has to develop the guide, just make it available to the brokers, salespersons, contractors, remodelers, and the general public, and then it just has to facilitate, encourage the transfer, but doesn't necessarily have, I mean, it's not a mandate that it must be carried. And in terms of, I think this is what, one of the representatives over here was getting at, wouldn't the state then feel liable for, or some responsibility if the homeowner didn't, if something in the guide was wrong, etc. I think that's kind of where the state, you know, codes have been somewhat of a point of criticism too, with the state building codes. So I think that this making this resource available in conjunction with or parallel with the state building codes, of, you know, if we're going to have building codes, here's the homeowner's responsibility in keeping an eye on their house and things like that. I think that they're very similar in that respect, and we're just providing a resource that will augment the state building codes that we already have.
Okay. Representative Linder, you still have the floor. Okay. To that point, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and committee members, we really won't have to worry about that particular code issue, because over the last 4 or 5 years, the state has so dramatically weakened all the codes that we've had by going to a universal code that they really won't matter pretty soon.
Okay. Representative Clark? Now, these are questions for the commissioner. Is your question for the commissioner?
Actually, I don't know.
Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I want to pick up on your point. Representative Grilley brought it up, the issue of the education about, let's say, why is that moving? I don't know if you can
ask that question. Representative Clensing, you want to try that?
It was not my intention. I guess you have to direct me to the line where you see that happening.
To that point, Representative Colt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, as I read the language that's being stricken here, that deals with the continuing education requirements for the builders, and the new language wouldn't preclude. The first note there is safety. There's no reason that lead-based paint awareness for builders. I mean, this isn't even dealing, as I read the language, with information provided to homeowners. The language is being stricken, and then the new language is being inserted.
Requirements for the builders. Yeah. Representative Clark?
Mr. Chair, same point. Why would you not want builders, especially if you've got people doing any kind of repair, renovation? My goodness, one of the biggest hazards, not only to the people who are doing the work, but to the family that whose house is being repaired, is generating lead paint dust. So I just...
Representative Clark, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. See, I'm sorry a lot lately, haven't I?
I just don't understand why you want to take it out. I was looking to see, is this replaced somewhere? But unless I'm mistaken, I don't see it. Maybe I'm missing.
Representative Clark, you could possibly put an amendment together that would make a point number 6 on page 3 after line 1, lead abatement programs. What you do is you go on the bottom of page 2 there where it says 4 customer service and 5 general project management. You can put a 6 in there that would say lead abatement programs. I'm not sure why. Does anybody know on the committee or author or commissioner where it came from that we're not going to be talking about lead abatement anymore? I mean, it's still out there. Representative Clensing?
Well, I think when I said it wasn't my intent, but when we drafted this and had that discussion, again, safety and security, we felt encompassed that, and... So we didn't feel like it was, we were taking it out when we did that, and that's
okay.
Why.
Okay.
That's there.
Well, you can decide, Representative Clark, what you want to do on that point.
If I understand the question, the answer, what you're saying is, you're assuming that by having the word safety and security, it covers all of the issues of safety and security. I guess I
we're going to be here for a while on this one, so we have time to come back to that. Any more questions for the commissioner? Okay, thank you, commissioner, for testifying before the committee. Have a great day. Let's go next to, and again, I'm going to rephrase my question. Is there anyone that has driven further than from the metro as designated by statute lines? Okay, we can go right down the road then. Okay, homeowners, let's see here. Now, do we have who's for and against here, or what? Well, they're all for it. Is there anyone that wants to testify against this bill?
Let's vote.
Okay, well, let's go down. What usually happens to the folks that are going to... For the folks that are about to testify, it seems like there's not a lot of folks against it. So if you could make your comments, get them in. We want them on the record. We want to hear from you. But if you could make them as concise as possible, I'd be appreciated because we have a long list here. And I do know that Bob Johnson from the Insurance Federation has some concerns about a portion of the bill. I'd like to hear the testimony. Then we'll start working on amendments. So we'll go to Mr. Todd Morris from Woodbury. If you could please join us. Dr. Todd Morris.
Mr. Chair, thank you for your attention to this issue, and I'd like to thank Representative Klinzig for all her work on this. I'm Todd Morris. I live in Woodbury. We bought a home in 1999 that had been built in 1994. Seemed like a great house. We really liked it. However, we were getting ready to move last year, so our realtor mentioned that you better get a moisture test or you can't sell your house. So we did, and in late May, early June, identified significant moisture intrusion problems. Brought it to the attention of the home builder. The home builder, the insurance company, and our inspector and our realtor all got together, sat down. I wasn't at the meeting, but basically the builder said, yep, you got a problem, and you're probably going to have to sue me to get it fixed. So we went through this process with the insurance company where they just kind of dragged and dragged and dragged and dragged, trying to get a settlement, and ultimately I came to the point where I had no way to get them to do anything. I have no leverage with the insurance company. They sent letters saying, well, don't talk to us anymore, talk to our attorney. And at that point, that means I get to go get our attorney and we start the lawsuit process. This has been incredibly painful. It's incredibly expensive. And this system is broken. And there has to be a better way to take care of those of us who bought a house in good faith and now find that our home and a huge investment has substantially decreased in value.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Dr. Morris? I represent Pugh.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Morris, have you resolved your claim?
No.
Still pending?
Yes.
How much have you expended to date in attorney's fees, you know?
Dr. Morris?
Approximately $2,500. And this is very early in the process.
Representative Pugh?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Morris.
Thank you.
Representative Rukamina.
How bad were you having noticeable mold or moisture problems?
Dr. Morris?
No, I thought everything was fine.
Representative Rukavina? Okay. Thank you, Dr. Morris. Question over here?
I was just wondering if he thought everything was fine, how you found out that it wasn't
fine. Because Dr. in Woodbury Morris? There's been... Oh, I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt you. Because in Woodbury, the number of houses that have been having moisture problems is high enough that our realtor said, if you don't get it tested, you'll never be able to sell it because you're going to ask for testing. And so we got it tested and then found the problem.
Representative Sikora?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Morris.
Thank you.
Next on our list is Jeff Pavas from Woodbury. I hope I said that right. Welcome to the committee. Sir, if you could please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Jeff Pavas. I represent myself.
Okay. And please sign in. Dr. Morris, did you sign in? There should be a sign-in sheet there. Welcome, committee, sir.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Boss, and I live out in Woodbury, and I've lived out there since 1990. The home I'm talking about today actually was built in 1998 by Reliable Homes. The current market value is around $600,000, and I'm not the original owner. I bought the house in 2000 in August, and I discovered the problem after my neighbors had a similar problem in April of 2003. Then I had two different firms investigated, Private Eye and Advanced Consulting, finding the problem in more details. At that point, they recommended talking to the home builder, so I went out and talked to the original home builder. I know the builder quite well because he built my first home. At that point, he said there's some substantial issues because Reliable Homes is bankrupt. But they left the corporation open so I can go through litigation to resolve the issue. So the home builder was quite willing to fix it, except because of the extensive damages that he incurred with this problem, he's gone bankrupt. So I was very happy with Rick's response. The insurer's response was basically non-existent. Zurich doesn't care, basically. I called them three times. I talked to representatives. I only got information back from them once I litigated. So I proceeded pretty quickly through litigation. And if you know the Voss family name around Minnesota, I have plenty of competent counsel. Okay. I filed the suit very quickly after 3 weeks of waiting for a response. I also financed my own fixes, and I plan to go through the process, paper it myself so I know exactly what damages are prior to me going to either mediation or through finally a court trial. So at this point, my repairs will be somewhere around $170,000. Legal fees are about $4,000. If I go to mediation, maybe we'll reach $10,000. If I go to court and they spend a lot of time in depositions, now we're going to go up to between $20,000 and $40,000 of court fees. And so I'll be spending a lot of money on this. That's why I like the bill so much. It puts the insurers for paying for the cost of my attorney's fees, and that'll get them to move. That's why I'm here to testify today.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for the witness? Okay, thank you very much. We will now go to Edward Ebersole from Stillwater. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. Committee members, my name is Ed Ebersole. I live in West Lakeland, just south of Stillwater. I purchased my home in 2001. At that time, it was for $450,000, stucco home. Soon after we closed, I had water pouring in through the windows. I contacted the home builder, who happens to live two houses down from me, and he said he would contact his insurance, Zurich International, same as the previous gentleman. It was more than 9 months before I received a letter from Zurich asking me exactly what the problem was. I wrote them a letter in reply. After repeated phone calls with them and talking to my brother-in-law, who's a lawyer, I knew then I had to contact a lawyer from my side. My neighbor down the street had the same home built by the same builder, and they had just recently won a court case against my home builder, so I went to them and they turned me on to their lawyer. At this point, I am over $8,000 into my lawyer. It's been over a year. We've been trying to work with the other side, trying to get through this. It's the same thing that other gentlemen just said. They don't want to do anything. They put you off. They're hoping that you will lose interest in the case or run out of money, and then you'll just go away. The damage to my home is estimated at $250,000. I don't have $250,000 to fix my home. The thing that upsets me the most is my home builder knew that there was problems with my home because he had the same people build the same home about four houses down from me. Now, he doesn't have a legal obligation to come and do anything to my home, but he had a moral obligation. He should have came down the minute he knew there were problems with that home and suggested to me, maybe we should look at your home and see if there's any damage. That's the point I'm at right now. I've been in this over a year with no resolution in sight.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Mr. Ebersole? Thank you for your... Oh, Representative Nelson?
You're saying Zurich, they were the homeowner warranty people, or they were the insurance company for the builder?
Insurance company for the builder.
Okay.
Representative Nelson?
The damage that you found, thank you, Mr. Chair, where was the damage of the
entire...
Mr. Ebersole?
We've had inspectors from the insurance company and from my lawyer has turned me on to inspectors. They all came out this summer, one large group, and they cut into my home in three different areas. And they discovered the damages through the entire home. So basically what they've decided to fix the home, all the stucco has to come off, all the sheathing has to come off. I have approximately $35,000 in windows that all have to be replaced because, like I said, the water's pouring in through the windows. And when they cut through the stucco and they got to the sheathing underneath, in some places it was so bad you could reach in there and grab the sheathing and it would crumble in your hands. And you would think at that point that it's pretty self-evident that something's wrong with the home and they would come and fix it, but they just stonewall you.
Representative Nelson?
I appreciate the problem. That's in the last few years there's been a lot of problem with that in the industry, and they changed standards and they lowered the built some of the building codes, and unfortunately some of these problems are happening statewide because of it, and it's an unfortunate situation.
Thank you, Mr. Ebersol. Okay, the next person to testify on our list is Diane Reimer.
Hi, my name is Diane Reimer. This is my husband, Dwayne, and we're from Jordan, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. We're pretty much in the same situation as those you've just heard from. However, right now we're in the process of going through it. Our home was built in 1995. The value of our home is approximately $500,000, and we are the original homeowners. We discovered the same problem. We have a stucco home, or we had a stucco home, and in the year 02, in the summer of 02, we discovered water pouring in into our carpet from behind my TV, where we could not see where it was coming through the window. So we thought, where is this water coming from? Found out that perhaps we should have the house tested and see where this moisture is coming from. So we also called a private eye. They came out, inspected our home, and found extensive damage. They've cut holes in my walls. They've taken... This is really very hard for me because my home is basically destroyed. Anyway, a test was done which proved to be extensive damage, mold, toxins. At that point we went to our builder, my husband did, and told him what was going on. And we knew this builder very well. We used to do work for him. Explained to him the situation, and he said he would contact his attorney or his insurance company. The damage was estimated at approximately at $250,000 to $300,000. We in turn hired an attorney because we were hearing nothing also. And in the meantime, for the last year and a, 2 months, we've had several people in my home, insurance people, inspectors, engineers. My walls have been cut open. My windows have been cut open. My carpet's been torn up at corners. There's mold everywhere. And they have all, in the process of this, have all agreed to the extent of the damage. So we assumed as a homeowner that the problem would be taken care of, so we hired someone. And to find out the extent of the damage, we have borrowed money to start the process. All the stucco has been taken off my home to find the extent of the damage. We have structural damage. Walls have been had to be replaced so far. All my windows have had to be replaced. They're not done yet. We're living in hell. My house is covered with poly. I can't see out my windows. I have people in and out of my home. I can't use certain rooms. I just am grateful that we don't have little kids at home. I've not been allowed to have my grandkids stay overnight because of the mold, and I worry about that. My whole life is in an uproar. So we go to mediation, assuming that they will take care of, the builder and the insurance company will take care of the problem. And they've all admitted to the problems. They've all taken their responsibility, and now we go to mediation, and not they did not come there in good faith. It cost us $3,500 that day to sit there and listen to them bully us. And I literally felt like I was raped when they came back and treated me so rudely with such a low offer. And that was that. They were not going to talk to us anymore. They don't want to pay us. They don't want to take care of this problem. And they've all basically admitted to me in my home that they're responsible for the problem. My issue here is this has nothing to do with the homeowner. The builder's insurance company, which is our builder, is also Zurich. If the problem is with the windows and the stucco and everything else, then they should deal with this. Not my husband and I. Not my blood pressure has gone up. I'm on medication my whole life, and this is not going to end for another year or so. I'm just fortunate I can borrow the money, but I'm paying interest. We've paid $15,000 in attorney fees so far. That I can get my work done. I don't know how these families do it with little children in their home. And I just don't understand where the consumer's protection is here. This is our part of our retirement, and our home is one of our biggest investments. And now my home is worth probably, if I'm lucky, just the land of $100,000. I'm very upset, and I'm sorry, and I appreciate you listening to me, but right now we're ending up going to court. And the latest thing happening now is that the insurance company, Zurich, now they want more time. We were supposed to go to court in September. Now they're putting us off, just like that gentleman said. They say it's going to take them another 12 months to do their discovery. That's all been done. We have all the test results and everything. So what they're doing is just taking us and trying to beat us down. And I'm not going to do it. This is my home. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Rukovina?
Ma'am, when you went to mediation, you referred to that they bullied you. They be the builder and the insurance company, or the bill?
Ms. Reimer? Or Mr. Reimer?
We were in one room with our attorney. Zurich and the other insurers for the stucco, the carpenter,
windows.
And the windows were in another room. They argued amongst themselves about who's going to segregate what, I'm sure. At our expense, we sat there till noon. Our attorney said, this may take till 9 o'clock tonight. Well, at noon, they were all done. No more offers. One low offer. They didn't even come in good faith. It was basically a
slap
like
the
one general. They keep you hanging on, and then in another 2 years, people will go, they throw your hands up and you say, I'll take anything, I'll just get done with it. But it's a tactic they use.
That's what I meant by the bullying.
They being the different insurance companies.
Right.
Well, you weren't referring to your builder.
No.
But
his insurance company was there.
Right.
Or attorney for the insurance.
Any other questions for the two witnesses? Now, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dabney.
A comment and not a question, but each of the homeowners that have come forward have identified that the real problem, it appears, in this is one insurance company that's allowed to do business in the state of Minnesota. And isn't there a question about, and I'm sorry the commissioner is not here, why an insurance company that seems to have a pattern of not acting in good faith is allowed to continue to operate in Minnesota?
That's a question we may wish to ask the commissioner.
Thank you.
That's a very good point.
To that point,
Representative Linder?
More than one insurance company is involved in this type of stuff. I've got a person out in my district that's going through the same thing this lady has after having a house built for them, 1 year old, $850,000 house. Water started pouring in before it was 1 year old. It took them almost a year to get the builder and the insurance people to even acknowledge anything other than it's not our fault. You didn't crack the window or something like that, and water's coming in everywhere. And they've been through the same things. Her husband had to move out because he had an allergy to mold. He couldn't even live there, and they have a child in the house, so it's a living hell, and that lady expressed it well. But it's a different insurance company, so we've got some severe problems here with with what's going on. And Mr. Chair, we're providing money for people in Russo that had their homes destroyed because of a water from a flood, and I think we need to, if we can't get some help from these insurance companies and these builders, we may have to do something as a state and then put some of these builders out of business or in jail, and then put some of these insurance companies out of business, because this is ridiculous. There's more than one person in my district that's got this problem. Evidently it's bad in Woodbury. And if Representative Cleansing wouldn't have had this bill coming up, I had planned on having one. But this is a serious problem.
Thank you, Representative Linder. Representative Cleansing and then Mahoney. Representative Cleansing?
Yeah, to Representative Dabney's comments, and like Representative Linder pointed out, there is more than one insurance company that is involved in some of these cases, and there are very many active investigations going on right now that... that's why the commissioner is very busy and why he had to leave, and it's of both insurance companies and some builders. We've got some very reputable builders here in Minnesota, but there are some who are being investigated right now, and there are also some insurance companies under heavy investigation. So we can't really share, I don't even know exactly who, but I've been assured that piece has started, and I've been encouraging homeowners to make sure that they report egregious problems.
Mr. Chair, if I can just respond briefly.
To that point, then, Representative Mahoney.
Thank you. I have no disagreement with either Representative Cleansing or Representative Linder. Certainly, this is a problem beyond one insurance company or one builder. There's any number of reputable insurance companies, any number of reputable builders. However, that doesn't change the fact that each of the homeowners that Representative Cleansing brought forward from different parts of the area each identified that the biggest problem they were having was the same insurance company. So I don't disagree at all with the comments of either the other two representatives, but we do still seem to have a problem, apparently, with this one insurance company. There may be problems with others, and there may be many that are acting in good faith.
And I think the commissioner's point was well taken, that this is consuming most of the time of the department. I mean, that seems to be the number one issue. So, Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, to some degree, agree with Representative Linder and Representative Cleansing. My only thought was, after the financial debacle in the stock market, they had tons and tons of problems. And, it seemed as soon as they required the chief financial officer to sign off on reports, and if they didn't, they were liable to go to jail. Things really seem to clean up, so maybe we should just try to, if the insurance companies are acting in bad faith and can be proven, we can throw that insurance executive, whether it's in Connecticut or California or Texas, we can bring them up to Minnesota. They're talking about a privatized jail. We'll probably put a nice, a nice building together and take that person and put them in jail for a couple of years.
Okay, we have quite a few more folks to testify here. Let's get back to the bill. We're not talking about building jail here. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, this is a point of information that I was thinking about. Has the amendment of H-1801A3 been offered?
Which one, Representative Clark?
H-3.
Okay, I've had a request on the 1A3 amendment that be withdrawn.
Okay, thank you. I'm very glad.
Is that correct, Representative Wolsterman?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wherever it came from, I'm going to wipe out all
the... A3 is withdrawn.
I'm going to wipe out all the assistance to the families.
Okay, with that, we'll go to a William Derrick and David Shedder from Derrick Construction. Can you please state your name, sir?
My name is Bill Derrick. I'm a resident of Woodbury, Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
I'm one of the owners, and I'm also the president and CEO of Derrick Companies, who's the parent company of Derrick Construction. Ours is a family business. It started in 1967 by my father. We build approximately 80 custom-built homes a year in the East Metro area in western Wisconsin. We also have a quite a large commercial industrial division also. I'm coming in here with maybe a little bit the other side of the story. We feel that we have been successful as a builder, working with our insurance company and settling these issues. We have been proactive. We have not waited necessarily for the homeowners to come to us and say, oh, we have a problem, and then throw up our hands. We've tried to actively take care of the issues. I believe that that's one reason why we've been in business for so long, is because we care about our clients, and we look to make sure that they're happy. Our insurance carrier is General Casualty Company, and they've been very good to work with. I will admit that when these issues came up, our company did hire an attorney to work for us, to work with our insurance carrier, to make sure that our insurance company did stand behind what they were supposed to cover us for. And I think that did help. There was some reluctance at first, until our attorney did point out some areas in their insurance policy that showed that they did have to take care of this. As a side note, prior to being insured by General Casualty, we were insured for quite a few years by Zurich, and what I'm hearing today is I'm glad that we are no longer insured by them. We have personally, and Dave Schrader, my operations manager, is also here. We have personally put in hundreds and hundreds of hours in trying to take care of this situation. It is a major situation, and we don't deny it as a building contractor. We know that things have to be made right by our clients, and they're trying to do that. We've invested a lot of money. We've had to put money up front in order to try to get some of these issues resolved before the insurance company pays us. Like I said, we're very proactive. We're about to send out another letter with our attorney's advice to some of our clients to make sure we're getting all of our clients in on this, that there is no left behind clients, so to speak. I will tell you, there is a couple of times we do have difficulties, and this has happened to us. This is real world. We have at least in two or three occasions where the first time we found out that one of our homeowners had a problem with their house was when we were served with a lawsuit by them. That is not a good way to do it. I appreciate what the homeowners that have testified to this point are going through. I empathize with them. But they started it the right way by contacting their builder. And we do have some clients that have not done that. And they serve us with a lawsuit. They're very unreasonable. They come with demands that say that we want X amount of dollars, and we aren't budging from that. If you don't settle, they make it very, very difficult to settle. And we have situations where they have demanded, in one case, demanded $425,000 was their bottom line. We aren't going any lower. And we were able to go in and actually fix the house, remodel the interior, new carpet, everything. We went above and beyond what was needed to fix the problem, and we're going to do it for under $200,000. So that's some of the problems we're having from the other side of the coin when litigation gets involved. I feel that, and I understand the situation when we're talking about legal fees. We don't like, as a business, we don't like to have to pay legal fees to defend ourselves. It costs us a lot of money. But we feel that if it's put in there that the homeowner gets their legal fees paid for, and I know there's some circumstances and what ifs and all this, but we just feel that that's going to, our experience is that that's going to tip the balance the other way, and it'll lead to more litigation. It'll lead to drawing out the process of getting these homes fixed. And personally, our side of it would be is that we feel that the legal fees portion of the bill would not be a good situation. I want to say that we see this moisture problem as a one-time deal. We are very confident as a builder that we have taken the necessary steps and changed certain processes subcontractors, that type of thing, that we don't expect this problem to happen in the future with any homes that we've been building over the last couple of years. We think it's a one-shot deal. There's a lot of blame to pass around. I mean, builders, subcontractors, insurance companies, building inspectors who really did not do an adequate job of inspecting buildings. There's a lot of blame to put around. I'm not here today to say who's at fault or why. I'm here to say that we think it's important that the problems are taken care of and we don't pass a bill or legislature that is based solely on this one issue that harms the industry in the future and makes housing even more costly than it already is. We'd like to think that we're part of the solution, not the problem. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I have Gunther Gerlach, Mahoney Linder. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the witness, you know, Woodbury's been mentioned a lot here. Is there something geographically about that area that causes this problem? And perhaps probably some of the problem is also caused by energy mandates that past legislatures have put on. Also, can you kind of address that issue? How can we in the legislature perhaps make this problem better? And is there some disclosure that has to be made about certain areas of the state where we build in?
Let me just speak, Derek. Oh, sorry. Let me just speak just to the first part, and I will need some help on the technical part of it. But our experience, we build both in the East Metro, mostly Woodbury, but East Metro and Western Wisconsin. Our experience is that most of our problems has been in the East Metro area. Why, I don't necessarily know. Pam, do you want to?
Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Pam Perry Weaver. I'm the Executive Vice President of the Builders Association of Minnesota. We represent over 4,000 licensed contractors throughout the state. Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, you asked specifically about Woodbury. I think that there was a couple of things. There was a building boom in the latter portion of the 90s. Houses were built. There was affluence, and stucco was used in those circumstances. So I think that that's kind of answers your question about maybe why the East Metro. That doesn't negate any of the other houses that were built the rest of the metro, but that seems to be where a lot of these problems have started and manifested themselves. We also believe that houses are tight today, and it was a mandate by the legislature in the early 90s that that houses will be energy efficient. Minnesota will have the most stringent energy code in the nation. That's not a bad mandate to have, except that we're the only state in the country that are trying to figure out how to do it. So when we tighten up a house, we've reduced our margin of error. We've got a lot of water in Minnesota. We get rain, we get snow. I mean, water is a part of our everyday life. But we are seeing primarily these problems with window installations and windows themselves. The installation has to be done differently with respect to this energy code in Minnesota. We can't do it the same old way. So we know that, all windows properly, correctly. Mr. Derrick is right. I think moving forward, we are confident that what we're doing is the right thing, but is it solving the problem from the mid-90s? No. And it won't happen in every house.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pam Perry Weaver, just out of curiosity, is there anything we can do to further ensure ourselves legislatively? To further ensure ourselves that we can eliminate some of this problem? Or is there any laws that were passed or mandates that were passed that we can try to eliminate that will affect this problem in a positive way?
Ms. Perry Weaver.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, I would like to sit here today and ask you to repeal the energy code, mm-hmm. but I won't do that. Customers today will not go back to a drafty house. Who's going to buy a drafty house today? It won't happen.
I know I'm going to get placed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rickett, but I understand you build your own house. So we can't go backwards at this point. I think the best I can ask the legislature to do and the Department of Administration that promulgates these codes is when they put in a code here in Minnesota that it's well tested. You know, we, Minnesota, tried to write our own energy code, and I think that probably was not the right thing to do. There are national code councils that put together, and there are a number of people who are much better on these issues than I am that can tell you there are national code councils that think about this on a regular basis. And we try to make it Minnesota specific, and I think that we get in trouble when we do that. And I think that's what happened in this circumstance.
Okay. Okay, Gerlach, Mahoney, Linder, Clark. Representative Gerlach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know the E3 amendment is not going to be offered, and I was saving a question for this, but I want to find out if what the precedent for this sort of thing is. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know, and I know that depending on who's paying legal fees, that has a tremendous impact on people's either access to or deterrence from the legal system. And maybe Mr. Pender knows, what is the precedence for where in statute where we say to one group or another, if you lose a case or win a case or whatever, that so-and-so has to pay the legal fees as opposed to both sides paying their own legal fees? Do we manipulate that process a lot in statute, or is this something new, or what? Maybe Representative Pugh and some of the other lawyers on here probably know a lot more about that. But I'm just wondering about that. And then, as a follow-up, then
Chris, you're giving the lawyers a chance to talk.
Well, this is probably going to be a matter really for the Civil Law Committee, because this bill's got a long way to go, I understand, and I'm sure they'll wrestle with that in the Civil Law Committee. But because it was brought up here about the legal fees and this sort of thing, I'm just wondering what precedence is there for that,
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and members, the sort of default rule in America, it's called the American rule, is that both sides pay their own legal fees unless there's some requirement to the contrary. And in our statutes, there are quite a few requirements to the contrary that are similar to this that say that the prevailing party pays. Or the prevailing party gets their legal fees reimbursed by the other side, either in all cases or, as Representative Klinzing has an amendment here, a more limited sort of situation, which was that if the builder denied the claim without a good faith basis for doing so. So anyway, that's the general contour of it. The general rule is each side pays their own, but we have a variety of statutes that change that and say that the winning party gets their legal fees paid.
To that point, Marissa Muller.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Gerlach, the closest area probably is the reverse situation of this, where you've got the contractor arguing with the homeowner. The homeowner says things weren't done right. Contractor sues to get their money, and the homeowner says, well, I'm not paying you the entire amount because there's a problem. In that case, under our statutes, the contractor, if they win, gets attorney's fee against the homeowner. So it's almost the exact reverse of this situation.
Okay. Representative Gerlach?
All right. I think I just was wondering if there was the okay. History of that would press me.
Okay, members, we still have a bunch of folks to testify. I've got more questions here, and we'll go down there. If we do get too late here, we're going to adjourn at 2:30. We would pull this bill over into the first meeting next week. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions here. And for the builder, I was reading Ed Lauterman this morning, and he kind of was talking about the economy, economics of building a home and some of the other things. And his statement was that no matter which way we vote today, it's going to cost more. So could you tell me, if this bill passes, what you think the approximate percentage increase in homes? I mean, I know that's a very difficult question, and I'm not going to, none of us here are going to say this guy told us it would only be, but just, 5%, 10%, 100%.
Mr. Derrick?
We have a hard time estimating what the price of gas or lumber is going to be next week, much less what something like this would be on us. I can't, in all reality, I can't give you a percentage, but I will tell you that my perception, and excuse the pun here, I'm not trying to sound like a politician, but
you got a room full of them.
I understand, so maybe I'll sound good here. I don't know, but I would just tell you my perception is that it is going to have an impact on the cost of housing. There are some good parts about the bill that I like. The idea of having to get together before you get a lawsuit going, that's common sense. I mean, you shouldn't have to legislate that. Once you try to get more and more government, my belief is more and more government mandates involved in the process, our costs are going to go up. I mean, I already feel like we're a heavily regulated industry the way it is right now.
President Mahoney?
Would Ms. Weaver have an idea of...
Ms. Prairie Weaver?
Chairman Davis, Representative Mahoney, insurance premiums for builders in the last 3 years have increased between 200% and 600% for general liability. General liability insurance. In order to do business in Minnesota, a builder has to have general liability insurance. I think that with an attorney's fees piece on this bill, you will drive that cost up even further, number one, and you'll reduce the number of carriers who are willing to write builders in Minnesota. We're already seeing that, which is why they're paying such high premiums. Now, who pays that ultimate cost? I mean, the builder, in order for the builder to stay in business, they're going to pass on that cost to the homeowner and put it in the cost of their home. So,
Representative Mahoney?
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Just finally, it's nice to see in your past testimony saying that you weren't in favor of any new codes because the ICC codes coming in. And I remember a conversation I had with somebody from the Builders Association, because right now they're trying to change the fire code, the electrical code. They have changed the mechanical and plumbing codes. And in my opinion, and I can prove it in my office, that they have weakened, and they will continue to weaken those codes and change them. So you'll have more of this particular issue, and I won't say another thing until Monday.
That's fine.
In this committee.
Representative Linder.
I'll just say thank you, Eric, for being a good builder, for standing behind your work, and for your testimony. We know there's a lot of good builders out there, and we're not trying to, blanket everybody with the same problem. But if we don't have something that a homeowner, like the ones we've heard testify, like the ones I've been dealing with for the last year, if there's not some way, what would be your suggestion on how they can get a builder to the table and to fix some of this stuff that, the builder's responsible if the subcontractors did the work, and maybe it's the subcontractors' people that maybe don't know what they're doing and nobody's following up. But it took a city that I represent threatening a criminal lawsuit to this builder, and he builds 800,000 to $1 million homes, and he's still building them, to get him to even come and sit down at the table. And I believe some of the work is being done now, but a year later, and all of the expense, $40,000 in attorney fees, I think it was like $60,000 in other tests that had to be done on the house to find out the problems. What do you suggest that these people do if there's no teeth in the law?
Mr. Derrick?
This is a suggestion. I mean, as a businessman, and keep in mind, it's the first time I've ever testified before a committee like this before. So, I did talk to my attorney last night and said, give me some thoughts on what's going on here. And I've done some research. I got people I know in Woodbury that didn't build poor, but I know their situation and that, and I get bombarded with this all the time. And one comment he made to me that I think was interesting, he said, they do have, these people have the problem, they do, the good news, the silver lining, if there is one, they do have insurance, albeit it's Zurich in most cases here, but they do have insurance. And maybe the suggestion is, and I don't know if this is right, I don't know how this works, but some form of the Minnesota government, the commissioner or insurance commissioner or somebody, should be getting more involved with making sure that the companies like Zurich and others that are not performing get involved and get them to take care of these problems. I that's one thing that, I don't know, maybe that makes too much sense, but I mean, I I think that something should be done. Now, this is my attorney who knows insurance very well and knows how insurance works and has represented other builders in the real estate matters and that was his suggestion. He said, they have insurance. We just got to, the state's got to figure out a way to get the insurance company to come forward and take care of it.
Representative Linder?
Well, it's, you know, what you're saying may be the answer. But like in my case, an $800,000 house with $400,000 worth of preparation, and you know what they're talking about doing with this house is just tearing it down. And like somebody said, it may not even be worth the land value that it was before it's all done. $800,000 house maybe have to be torn down, else it can't be completely fixed. You know, I don't know, the insurance should pay their part, but I think a builder that's responsible for that should also pay his part. You know, not every builder, but the ones responsible. You know, just like in all of life, we got to be responsible for our own actions.
Okay, Representative Clark.
Mr. Chair, I know we have some other witnesses, so I'll just be really brief. But I, Sweaver, when you had a different job, one of the issues that was talked about a couple years ago was actually trying to make houses healthy, and there were there was legislation dealing with the kind of ventilation kind of mandates. And I'm bringing this up because Representative Gunther talked about maybe reducing mandates, and I think you were kind of sharing that idea. I think we need to be really careful. We're in this situation because there's been lowering of standards. That's at least part of the explanation. There's been some lowering of standards that were mandates that have been lowered, and so now we have, you know, building that's not meeting certain standards. And in addition to the insurance companies doing their job, you know, we can prevent some of these problems, I think. And so I'm just bringing this up to say, let's not talk about wholesale repealing standards, you know, for example, the energy code or other things. Let's talk about the things that makes a house healthy, and we do know a lot about that, the kind of air exchange is supposed to be happening, all of that now. And those are issues that I know that your current employer, has weighed in on over the last few years, usually opposing, you know, some of the kind of things that would deal with good ventilation and stuff. So I'm just bringing that up because there's discussion about let's repeal mandates, blah, blah, blah. Well, let's carefully talk about changes that have to do with people's health when they live in a house. That's my only point, and if we're going to start looking at that as a committee, I would hope to get the whole story and deal with prevention more than anything.
Thank you, Representative Clark. Representative Nelson and Stang.
I guess the question I have, this is a serious problem, and we need to deal with it, but I'm looking at the bill and reading it and through it, and I just don't see what in this bill is going to solve this problem. A lot of these things that happened 10 years ago when these homes were built. You can't go back in time and make those changes. We can, when we identify the problem, we can go ahead and fix them. But what I don't see what the language in here is going to force bad contractors, not the good ones that are like Derek here, who's doing what he's got to do to fix the problem, force them to get them to solve their mistakes. I don't see that in the bill, and I guess maybe the attorneys here can explain that to me. But I don't see it.
Representative Quinzen.
Yes, the communication required regarding a claim in the subdivision 3 on the A2 amendment, that brings builders to the table with the homeowner in this much stronger language than currently exists. Do you have that amendment?
It's the A2 amendment.
The A2 amendment.
Page 2, line 6. Representative Nelson.
I guess then maybe the attorneys here could explain this to me, because I don't, like I said, I don't see how it's going to bring them to the table and make them sit down and solve the problem and make a good faith effort to come down and say, yes, there's a problem here, we'll see what we can do to fix it. I don't see that here.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Quinzen.
I didn't finish my response because I was waiting for Representative Nelson to find the amendment. this is much stronger language that requires a meeting between the builder and gives the vendee or the homeowner some legs to stand on in terms of here's a timeline, here's a process, and they didn't show up for that process. And then there's some language at the bottom that gives the commissioner the authority to suspend the license of a builder who does not comply with this section of the legislation. This is much stronger than what currently exists.
Representative Nelson?
I guess I have to have one of the attorneys here tell me that's going to do it. I don't see it.
Okay. We can follow up with that. Representative Sting.
Mr. Chair, I guess my point is just to a couple points made by others regarding the lowering of standards causing this problem. I guess I'm confused is that it seems to me that as a state we set forth these standards and there probably was more ambiguity with what we were setting forth that may have created problems, but I guess I would argue that it wasn't a lowering of the standards that caused this problem. It's been mentioned by several legislators, and I don't think that's what we can attribute this problem to, and I don't know if anyone at the table would like to respond to that as well.
Ms. Perry Weaver?
Representative Davis, Chairman Davis, Representative Stang, I would agree with you. With respect to Representative Clark, I think that the standards were increased. The issue is how do you, from a construction practices perspective, how do you meet those standards? You know, and in terms of air exchangers, those are good. Those are good things. But if they're not properly maintained, they're not properly run, you are going to cause a problem in the house. Again, it's this margin of error that has decreased for builders. I think that if you change the code and you don't properly educate on the code and you don't understand quite how it's going to impact the durability of the house, we're going to see a problem. I gave you a timeline in your materials that looks like this, and you can track exactly where the mandate started and all the code changes. We taught this code to the industry four times during the 90s, and it wasn't promulgated until the mid-90s. It caused a lot of confusion. I'm sympathetic to Representative Mahoney and the circumstances that the mechanical contractors are going through now. They don't want to see a code change because they think it's going to cost them millions of dollars to educate the industry to get them up to speed. And he's absolutely right.
Mahoney?
Yeah, well, in the mechanicals, maybe in your
well, circumstance. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, you weren't talking
anymore. Okay. Yeah. Representative Sting?
No.
Okay. Let's Representative Rukmina.
Mr. Derrick, the way I see it, at least three of the four people that came up and testified said that their builder, Representative Linder, tried to help them. And no. Four of the four said, or at least, you know, the one gentleman said the builder should have known and told him because it was a problem with other people. It seemed they all said the insurance companies for the builders were doing nothing, including that. And I don't know how Mr. Derrick feels about it and what your experience has been with your insurance company. You seem to be proactive, and so I'm curious, when you go in and meet with the homeowner and say, I'll try to fix this before I approach the insurance company, then you go to your insurance company, do they work with you and reimburse you for the work that you've done? Are you fighting your insurance company as much as these people seem to be doing after the fact?
Mr. Derrick?
I would tell you that when we first got into this, our insurance company did try to fight us a little bit. And as I mentioned earlier, we did hire an attorney to represent us with our insurance company. He pointed out some fine print in their policy that showed, hey, you've got to step forward here. I think that helped. I think that we did put a lot of money out up front fixing these things. We're talking, our average fix is probably $80,000 per house, maybe in a range of $50,000 to $100,000+ is our average fix. We did put some money out up front to take care of this. I think General Casualty probably is slowly getting caught up and paying us with this. the approach we're taking now, it probably slows things down a little bit, and yes, we probably have to ask patience from our homeowners. We've kind of gotten to the point, though, now where we sit down and we negotiate with General Casualty what it's going to take to fix it. We even give them the option they can go hire someone else to fix it if they don't want us to fix it. We do have our own workforce so that we can send our own laborers out on the job site to fix it. So we give them that option. We basically give them a price and say, this is what we're going to charge to fix it, and they can take it or leave it. And we negotiate that way, but it's a proactive negotiation between us and General Casualty and the homeowner. And one thing in addition, I don't want to make it sound like our homeowners are really pleased that they have this problem and that we're willing to take. No, they're unhappy about this problem, and rightfully so. I mean, you know, they hired us to build them a nice home, and we build homes that range, you know, $300,000 to $800,000, $900,000, and they have every right to be frustrated when something like this happens. But we also know that we're going to try to make good with the situation. In the end, we've gotten a couple of letters back from our homeowners telling us, yes, it was frustrating, but gee, thank you very much, and yes, it was drawn out, but you held to it and stuck to it and got it done, and we think that's great in the end when you get that kind of.
Well, Representative Rubina.
And Representative Prentice, we do require in this that for these builders to be insured, and there's nothing in your bill that helps expedite the process. It seems to be that most of the people that testified to this point have said the problem has been with the insurance industry. All of us that have been around here for a while know that, you know, sometimes it's pretty hard. As a matter of fact, most of the time it's pretty hard to collect your insurance company. It's just small little township mutual, which I remember seemed to be okay, you know, and your neighbors and that. So I don't know, Representative Lindsay, where your bill's gonna, you know, a lot of these people here, what they need is some money in the end to fix their homes, and the builders, I don't know, maybe they're guilty, maybe they're not, maybe they should have said it. This gentleman here sounds very reputable and willing to try to help, but in the end, if the insurance companies don't pay up, you know, what's going to happen? How are we going to solve the problem? And it seems kind of strange that the commissioner that regulates insurance ran off, you know, before we could ask him something.
Well, we held him open for questions here, and he had other commitments he had to go to. So, but he can be contacted any time, and this bill's not going to be done today. So,
and it's a terrible problem. I feel very sorry for these people, but I don't see how the bill really, in the end, is going to solve the problem. Unless we make sure that these people that hired insurance companies, if there was some type of catastrophe like this, through no fault of their own, and expected that they would be covered. Make sure that that insurance industry or company pays the bills that they were paying for you.
Representative Clinton?
Yes, to that. I believe, actually, that the meeting process that I, again, pointed out before, it really does expedite things that have not been happening. It's been taking, in some of these cases, and not in cases with reputable builders like Bill Derrick, but in cases where the builder isn't coming to the table, isn't going through the house, this process is requiring a certain amount of days. The communication has to happen. The vendee has to make the request. Within 10 days, the vendor has to get back to them. Within 30 days, they have to show up at the house to inspect. This can't be a long, drawn-out process anymore of a year or two of getting back to the homeowner. And I think that is on, it's the builder's insurance, not the homeowner's insurance. So it's the builder's possibility to be proactive, and this, I hope, will incentivize, you know, that process.
Member Covina?
I don't know what this does here. Maybe attorneys. I hate to ask attorneys for opinion. There's five attorneys on this committee. That's part of the problem, you know. And this is, yeah, this is a small committee. But I don't know how that's going to expedite. You know, how are you going to squeeze blood out of the turnip? That's the problem. And you can have a 60-day process here to respond and whatever, and then you're still ending up in court at the end of that process. And I understand what you're trying to do there. You know, if the vendor does not comply, may commence an action. Seems to me to be a lawsuit. Maybe a better way would be some type of, like we do in a labor dispute, Representative Mahoney, but have an arbitration where the homeowner picks an arbitrator and the builder picks an arbitrator, and then they both together pick a one that they can both agree on, because you know whether they're going to favor the homeowner or not, you know that, and you go through a 60-day process or whatever, and then if you can't reach some type of agreement, you end up in court. But, you know, I don't know if this bill is going to solve
it. Mr. Pender, can you tell Representative Rokovin and the committee how this would kind of speed things up over current law to get some resolution?
Mr. Chair, how Representative Rukavina's proposal or Representative Klinzing's bill?
Representative Klinzing's bill.
The amendment for amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I think the theory of it is to try to encourage early communication between the builder and the homeowner to try to clarify the issues early, try to encourage early communication.
Representative Rokovina?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Pender, and if we can't encourage it, how does it ultimately help this amendment ultimately help the homeowner that's sitting there living in plastic polyurethane in a moldy, moisture-ridden home?
Mr. Pender?
I think it... I guess Mr. Chairman, Representative Rukavina would have to be compared to what happens now, and whether you think that would be a better result than what happens now under current law.
Mr. Pender, would it maybe be better to say these reputable people have an insurance company like they're supposed to, that the insurance company pays the cost up front and require it, and then the insurance company can, after the fact, after they fix this lady's house, instead of waiting for 2 years, that they have to pay it, because that's why this guy bought insurance in the first place, and then the insurance company can sue the builder or the homeowner in court after the fact? Is there some way we could do that?
Well, Representative Coles, to that point.
Well, to this point, Representative Rukavina, the current situation doesn't require a builder who's not reputable or their insurance company to come to the table until there's a summons and complaint that's been served on it. This forces the builder and their insurance company, somebody, to respond to the homeowner. So I think it does get the communication going. Right now, if a builder isn't reputable, doesn't want to be proactive in solving this problem, which I think is the biggest problem that we need to address, there's no requirement for them to come to the table. And that's some of the problems that I think Representative Klinzing's bill is trying to address. This is going to force them to the table within 10 days of getting a letter from the homeowner.
Representative Rukavina?
Representative Coles, you're a young and upcoming attorney. tell me in the end how this is going to help fix this lady's problem over here any quicker than if there's no way to force the insurance industry to get involved with the same.
Representative Coles?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Rukavina, I think if you have two people talking to each other, you're much more likely to have a resolution than if you have one person, a homeowner, upset and frustrated and not getting any response from anyone. If you get the people to the table, you have a chance of getting a solution. If the builder doesn't want to be at the table right now, if their insurance company doesn't want to be at the table right now, they don't have to until the homeowner serves a summons and complaint. We ought not force the homeowners to go through that. I think we agree on that. I think we can get them to the table sooner.
I agree
100%.
Where does it force the insurance company that Mr. Derek has to come to the table?
It doesn't.
just forces him to come to the table.
Representative Coles?
My mistake.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative Rubina, I don't know. I doubt that you are mistaken on that. I think you're absolutely right. But the insurance company is coming to the table through the builder.
But Mr.
Representative Rubina?
Representative Cole, you've heard people in the testimony say their builder was on the side in at least three of the four cases I heard, and the insurance company did. You can force two paupers to come to a table, but if the royalty ain't there with the money, nothing happens. So where's the person with the money being forced to come to the table in this whole bill or amendment?
Representative Cleansing, do you have some thoughts on that?
I think that this, Mr. Chair and Representative Rukavina, that is this going to solve 100% of the problems? No, but from the cases, and I've got a couple hundred cases that are very similar to the ones that you heard today, it'll solve at least, I don't know if it's going to solve it in the end, but it's at least going to solve the problem that in over half of those cases, if not 70%, the builder never responded to the homeowner's complaint and dragged it out, and for whatever reason. And you said it yourself that the general liability insurance is required by the state of Minnesota, that builders are required to carry that, and there are a lot of contractual obligations that come with that particular contract. So I think that the builder coming to the table and the contractual obligations of the insurance company backing them up is bringing the insurance to the table in this piece.
I'm looking forward to next week and the insurance industry coming to this piece.
I'm sure they're looking forward to it also. Representative Mallory.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question, I suppose, of Mr. Pender. Right now, my understanding, without thinking deeply about it, is that if there's something that has to be done quickly, they can still repair it and sue for that cost later. Under this bill, would this force them to not have a claim for any expenses they paid to correct the damage, since this would give the vendor a certain amount that you apparently couldn't sue within that time? Can you do emergency types of damage control or whatever like you can under the present law and still collect for that later?
Mr. Pender?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mullery, the cleansing A2 amendment on page 2, line 7 starts with prior to commencing an action under this chapter, so it just keeps the homeowner from suing until this process has gone through. But there's no reason why a homeowner couldn't repair the damage, but they would of course want to document the condition of the property very thoroughly before they repaired it for use in the future litigation.
Representative Mullery? Just a question. Representative Vanderveer?
I'm going to pass, Mr. Chair.
Okay. With that, we'll go to Pam Perry Weaver, Building Association of Minnesota. I don't know if you have more to add or. Okay. We'll now go to Greg Johnson, St. Paul Building Official. Welcome to committee, sir.
Mr. Chairman, that's not accurate. I'm not the building official for the City of St. Paul, and I'm testifying today representing the Association of Minnesota Building Officials.
Okay, there's a distinction without a difference. Okay, thank you, sir.
It makes a difference to my employer and the actual building official, sir.
Okay, the clerk will, or the I mean, legislative assistant will note that distinction.
Members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, I'm testifying today in support of the bill. We believe that there's some minor improvements that could be made to the language, but that particularly the piece regarding the reporting of municipal staffing, we believe that's a critical component that should be added to the already required reporting on the part of jurisdictions that administer the state building code. We've got a real concern right now that given local government economies and the fact that building departments are revenue generators, that it's extremely difficult for some city administrations to resist the temptation to take the fees that have been paid for services and use them for purposes that really aren't related to building code administration. When we do that, what happens is there's downward pressure on staffing levels in the building department arena, and that means that each building inspector, mechanical inspector, plumbing inspector, is going to carry more inspections than is probably appropriate to the workload. That means they spend less time on the job site. It means they don't catch things like inappropriate window flashings. It means they don't catch things potentially that are much more serious than the issues we've discussed today. And I would point to the nightclub fire a year ago in East Warwick, Rhode Island. That was a failure of inspection. That was a circumstance where both the building inspector and a fire inspector had been in the building. There was an obvious code problem in the building, and they didn't call it, and eventually it led to the deaths of 100 people. That's what we do, is we try and go out and make sure that people's health and welfare and their basic safety is going to be taken care of. We think that particularly the reporting piece of this bill will help us to do that. Additionally, we're very supportive of the portions of the bill related to contractor continuing education and pre-education for residential contractors. We think that those would be important improvements in the basic skill set and competencies that we expect residential contractors to have, and we think it'll make our job easier and probably lead to less staff hours on the part of our people as they administer the code. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Johnson? Representative Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that we haven't spent a lot of time on looking at this is the role of the building inspector in some of these problems. What is your association's position on liability, or looking at the liability that we currently, a building inspector currently has, as far as, from what I understand, I've heard some testimony a couple of years ago that you could be liable for as much as returning the inspection fee if you missed something.
I'm unaware that we would have to, Mr. Chairman,
I'm sorry.
Representative Vandeveer, I'm unaware that we'd even have to return the fee, quite honestly. We have typically municipalities and cities owe a general duty to the public to inspect buildings for generally purposes of health, welfare, and safety. We don't owe a specific duty to the owner. In other words, we're not quality control inspectors for individual owners, and that is pretty much the case law that we operate under. And the our association would support maintaining that doctrine, because quite frankly, most of us are municipal employees, and we would have to all of a sudden jump into the realm of errors and omissions insurances and significant additional individual costs if we didn't have something of that immunity from liability. Having said that, an inspector who is practices malfeasance or misfeasance, operates outside of the scope of their duty, enters into details of design when they shouldn't be going there, and does something that's dishonest in the practice of their job, can once again acquire immunity. But if you're talking about an inspector who just merely misses something or wasn't on site when the work in question was being installed to see it, we aren't currently held liable for those things.
So
what you're telling me is, as far as any assurances to the homeowner or the contractor or the public in general, the fact that a property has had an inspection from a municipal inspector is meaningless.
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edgar, I don't believe that our inspections are meaningless. It's my profession, sir. I take a lot of pride in protecting the safety of the citizens of this state. Having said that, I would bet in the 10 years I've been doing this, I've missed something. I bet someplace I went in there and I was looking around and I didn't see something. So, could I tell you that things don't get missed? Absolutely not. Can I tell you that generally they do not get missed? I would say that that's accurate. We've already heard testimony today here about some of the particular difficulties associated with administering the energy code. Circumstances, new building materials, new techniques, right? A mandate to be more stringent than anyone else. We were as burdened as the builders, with the exception of not having that financial penalty, or the financial penalty that you've heard the homeowners today talk about. But can I tell you that, can I point in any individual building and say that building is 100% code compliant? I probably cannot do that. Can I point at the life safety performance of the buildings in this state since the building code was adopted in 1972? I can do that.
Mr. Vandenberg?
Well, my only comment would be is that private inspectors do carry liability insurance, and that I own an appraisal company. We carry errors and omissions, and we are responsible, and the public does have something. And if we make a mistake, and I think it's interesting that you would argue that you should offer no assurance other than health and safety, which when you're doing new construction inspections isn't exactly what you're out there for. It's to ensure that the footings are properly installed, that the home has been constructed or the property has been constructed to code, and that the homeowner or the property owner and the contractor would have some assurances to that. And as you mentioned, the cities often use your inspections in your department as a revenue generator, and I just think the public should get something for that. I'll leave it at that.
Mr. Johnson, very briefly, and I'm going to go to Representative Lanning, then we're going to shut her down for the
Mr. Chairman, Representative Vanderveer, I agree that when you come in and pay a building permit fee for inspections, you should receive that service, and I think that one of the things that this particular bill does, it makes it more likely that you will receive that service, and we will be at least in a better position to try and provide the assurance you're looking for.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, I was wondering if your group that you represent has done any surveying at all as to the extent to which these problems exist out there, and any kind of surveying as to what inspectors feel are the most common contributing factors that have led to these problems. Do you have any sense of either of those kinds of things?
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, my members have expressed concern primarily about the difficulty of complying in the past with the energy code, as has been already discussed. We have concerns about some of the technological advances in building code materials may have outpaced our understanding of how to actually install those materials in a way that will allow the building to perform. We have some real concerns with the competency of some of the people that are installing certain products in residential construction, primarily windows and doors. We worry about flashing details. We've got window manufacturers that will refuse to provide flashing details for the installation of their products. And what they're afraid of is they're afraid that if they provide a flashing detail for installation, then the product is installed accordingly, and there's still a leak, that now they've assumed liability in this process. The moisture that really I think is at the root of many of these residential problems, it's got to come from inside or it's got to come from outside, and we're aware of that, or it's got to be constructed into the system. So we have concerns about people working with wet lumber, uncovered lumber. Relative humidities of 40% outside, and the lumber pile is you know, cut up and installed. We've got concerns with any number of these issues, but because it's so complex, I don't think there's any one thing that we're capable of pointing at and saying that, that's the problem, this is what you have to do to fix it.
Representative Lanning?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'd like to pursue this line of questioning, but given the hour, I'll defer to our next meeting.
Okay, members, I apologize. I guess our time is supposed to be 2:15, so it held you 15 minutes later. So with that, we'll pick, if you could put the stuff, we still need the amendments and the agenda and so forth in your packet, so we have those for next week. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.